Always. Dadati. Gives. Kamasya. Of lust. Chidram. Facility. Tam. That lust. Anu. Following. Yay. Those. Arayaha. Enemies. Yoginaha. Of the yogis or persons trying to advance in spiritual life. Kritra Maitrasha. Having put faith in the mind. Pachuhu. Of the husband. Jaya Eva. Like the wife. Pumshjale. Who is unchaste or easily carried away by other men. So, translation. An unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours. And it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. So you can repeat? What's that? All right. An unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours. And it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed. And they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this verse, the word kunschali refers to a woman who is easily carried away by men. Such a woman is never to be trusted. Unfortunately, in the present age, women are never controlled. That's an absolute statement. And I mean, you have to understand that in context. I mean, it never in this particular case means hardly ever. I'm not going to take that as completely absolute. You know, Prabhupada is making a very strong statement, but it's not that there are certain cases, because like Prabhupada's mother and other people were certain, and Prabhupada's sister and other people Prabhupada knew were certainly, you know, very chaste and everything like that. According to the directions of the Shastras, women are never to be given freedom. And we should take this off the internet, so nobody hears. When a child, a woman must be strictly controlled by her father. When she is young, she must be strictly controlled by her husband. And when she is old, she must be controlled by her elderly sons. If she is given independence and allowed to mingle unrestrictedly with men, she will be spoiled. A spoiled woman being manipulated by her paramours. So this is also an important statement. Being manipulated. So the men are also unscrupulous, because they're manipulated, taking advantage of someone's soft-heartedness. Might even kill her husband. This example is given here because a yogi desiring to get free from material conditions must always keep his mind under control. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, in the morning, our first business should be to beat the mind with shoes 100 times. And before going to bed, to beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. Okay? And actually, we go into his room and we do that in Radhakund. There's actually the broom and the shoes of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time, and an uncontrolled mind, followed by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into the material condition. One should be very careful of the mind, just as a husband should be careful of an unchaste wife. So, nityam dadati kamasya chidram tam anuye radaha yoginam kritta maitrasya pachurjayeva pumschale. So, omagana timidanda sha gananjana shalakaya chakshur umiditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So Prabhupada has made some statements here that are quite heavy and also politically incorrect in the modern day and age. So we have to be careful. It's called PR language, you know, PC language, politically correct language. So obviously we wouldn't speak about this if we're going to the university or speaking to some young people, even young people from India, you could speak like this too, because they're ABCDs. That means American born confused Deshis. Did you ever hear that expression before? The second generation. American born confused Deshis. All right, so Deshi means someone from India. Just like you have, there's a certain type of cows that are called Deshi cows. You ever heard of that before? Deshi cows are like the original breeds from India. And in America, we have all these mixed breeds of cows. Anyway, apart from that particular issue, we see that it is a fact that if, a woman is unchaste, not chaste to her husband, not only can she kill the husband, but we've had instances, not personal instances, of course, but instances that we've read about in the news where the woman kills the children. That's that example I've given many times before, where there was a woman who had a paramour and her children were interfering with her lusty affairs, and she put her children in the car, and it was on sort of like an incline that was going down to a lake, and she took the emergency brake off, took the car out of gear, out of park, and watched as the car slid into the lake. And the car filled up with water, and her poor little children, there were three children in there, and the poor little children just like, anyway, drowned. Can you imagine how heartless a person can be to watch the children drown like that? And of course, there's also abortion in the modern day and age, because abortion allows someone to have unrestricted sexual activity and not worry about the consequences. Of course, there's also different diseases too, you know, venereal disease and AIDS and other things. I mean, it's quite interesting how in this day and age there's so much push and propaganda to come up with a remedy to AIDS, and it's interesting, there's many other diseases that kill a lot more people than AIDS. But people are just like focused on that more than anything else. I mean, you don't find so many organizations like heart disease and other diseases like that. You know, people picketing, come up with a cure for heart disease. You don't find people in front of the White House with their picket signs, come up with a cure for heart disease. I mean, obviously we want a cure for heart disease, but you know, that's on the back burner compared to AIDS. Because the lusty affairs are just so important to people in modern society. And they're becoming more and more important to people in modern society. So let's take the example of the apsaras, or one particular apsara, to understand what a chaste, an unchaste lady can actually do. Not only kill her children, she can even curse her paramour if the paramour doesn't satisfy her lust. There's the example of Arjuna. When he went to the heavenly planets, he was searching out some weapons so that he could fight more effectively against the Kurus. And he also was getting dancing instructions. And while he was getting dancing instructions, this one Apsara Urvasi saw him. And she became very attracted to him. Because Arjuna is quite a handsome chap. You know, very muscular and everything like that. I guess the women like the muscles. That's why people take steroids. And you see sometimes these muscle-bound men who basically can't even eat food because their hand won't reach to their mouth because their muscles are so... You ever see people like that? I mean, the muscles are so they can't go like that. So they have to have someone feed them, basically. I mean, of course, that's an exaggeration. But they're really muscle-bound. And the women are buying the magazines. And you see some of these muscle magazines, the women buy them, and there's men like Mr. World or something like that. Anyway, there's Miss World, Mr. World. So Arjuna, he was quite muscular and quite handsome, even though he was a human being, and the apsaras are generally interested in the demigods, because demigods, they live longer, they don't smell bad. Human beings have certain deficiencies in them that demigods don't have. So she became interested. And of course, the apsaras are the heavenly unchaste girls, the prostitutes. It's not that they're prostitutes in the same sense that we understand prostitutes. I mean, generally, when you say someone's a prostitute, that means someone stands on the street corner. You call it streetwalker sometimes. Street corner, or another fancy word for prostitute in America is what? Call girl. That's someone who doesn't stand on the street corner, but someone who has a mobile phone. And you can call them. So the Heavenly Society girls, they're not the prostitutes in the sense, the literal sense, but they're prostitutes in the sense that Prabhupada meant when he was talking about this boyfriend-girlfriend thing means prostitution. You know, when one keeps switching there. You know, he's my steady. Like you see this in the universities, of course, and even in the high schools, and now even in the grade schools. They encourage the little boys and little girls, even before they reach puberty, to have like boyfriends and girlfriends. They said, oh, is she your girlfriend? Is he your boyfriend? So the prostitution, basically, in this particular context, at least of the demigods, means someone who has various boyfriends like that and changes from time to time. Okay. Like, he's my steady this week. He's my ex-steady. You know, steady means, doesn't mean nishta. It means it's just steady for the week. And then next week there's someone else. You trade them up. I mean, even the men do the same thing. This is not meant as a criticism of women. Like I was talking to one lady last night about how the men... The men treat the women sometimes, if there's unchaste women, they treat the women like the latest model of cars. Like, what is it, 2013 cars are now out, and you can buy them, and you want to trade in your 2012 cars. And because it's new, there's this word that's just made its way into the English language. It's called euphoria. You ever heard this before? Like euphoria? I was mentioning this last night. Euphoria. And that's like, you know, people get very happy when they have a new iPhone or a new computer or a new girlfriend. It's called euphoria. Anyway, it's a new word you can learn. Like euphoria, euphoria. So, anyway, getting back to this story about Urvasi. She saw Arjun, and because she just had different boyfriends, and, you know, it really didn't matter who her boyfriends were, and that was her position, the apsaras. So she became attracted to Arjuna, and even considering the fact, of course, she was like the one of the, not forefathers, but foremothers, if you can make a word, of the whole Kuru dynasty. I mean, there was her relationship with Pururava. Anyway, there's so many stories in the Bhagavatam about that. So she comes up to Arjuna's door and knocks on it and says, you know, how are you doing, big boy? Or whatever they say. And Arjuna said, you know, what can I do for you? And she said, he said, I love you. And he said, you're like my mother. And those were like words that really hurt her because she had this intention. As you know, when one is very lusty, contemplates sense objects, and of course her sense object was Arjuna, and then one becomes attached to the sense object, one becomes lusty, and then ultimately, because the lust is not satisfied, the anger manifests itself. So then, because Arjuna refused her advances, and he even called her mother, Mother Urvasi, You're just like, steam started coming out of her ears, you know, or whatever. And she turned into, you know, something different. And what happened is that she cursed him. She says, if I can't have you, no one will have you. Let you become a eunuch. And Arjuna thought, this is a really bad curse. So, of course, he went to Indra. And Indra was able to rectify that by just allowing the curse, in consultation with Urvasi, but just allowing the curse to act during 1 year, where Arjuna had to act as this dancing teacher, Brihanala, in the kingdom of Virat. That's a whole story of the Mahabharata. So there you actually see what this lust is, you know, the uncontrolled mind, lust, and what an unchaste person, unchaste. It's not specifically I'm pointing out women, but the reason that the word chaste is used in relationship to women is because that women, here comes the politically incorrect thing. So the women have stronger emotions. I'm not going to use the term are less intelligent because that's often misunderstood. What it means to be less intelligent. Have stronger emotions than men. Okay? Very strong emotions. Generally. I mean, there's exceptions. This is Kali Yuga. Men and women, you know, it's all mixed up nowadays. So, but they have very strong emotions in this way and that way, and the mind is very strong. And, I'm not saying this is a discrimination against women, but it's just like the women have stronger emotions in general. And, you know, I've seen it. It's stronger emotions. And so when one has stronger emotions, it's like having the mind that is stronger than the intelligence. And therefore the mind can take away, or the senses, or the mind is considered the sixth sense, not sixth sense in the sense of ESP, but the sixth sense, it can steal away the intelligence when the mind is very strong and the senses are very strong. It can steal away the intelligence of the most intelligent person. So that's a natural fact. Therefore, the women have to be protected in the Vedic society. And Arjuna makes this argument in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. That if we kill all the men in the battlefield, Kurukshetra, there's going to be a bunch of ladies, I mean, perhaps millions of ladies, and I'm sure there were, who will be unprotected. Of course, Krishna assures him that because the ladies are actually Krishna conscious, they're not going to be unprotected. And also, if the woman is chaste to the husband, even if the husband dies, there's not going to be a question of her running off with another man. So that's another point. That it's not a question simply that the husband has to be there physically. Just like, let's compare it to the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master. It's not that the spiritual master has to be there physically or be on the planet, but the disciple remains faithful to the spiritual master. Now we see, when Prabhupada left the planet, that some devotees, they remained faithful to Prabhupada, and some others didn't remain faithful to Prabhupada. Prabhupada actually stated that when the spirit, in the fourth canto, part four, when the spiritual master leaves the planet, the disciples should take up the mission or be dedicated to the mission of the spiritual master. Otherwise, the disciples should be ready to leave this world with the spiritual master, just like originally they had this sati rite where the wife would leave the planet when the husband died. And the wife voluntarily entered the fire. It wasn't a question of she had to be pushed in like in the modern day and age. Modern day and age, it's very perverted because the husband's family wants to get rid of the wife after the husband dies, and they either push her into the fire or they send her off to a holy place with no money to her in her possession as a widow and just to dump her and get rid of her. That wasn't the position of sati. So the reason for sati was not just to get rid of someone who was old and useless. The reason was that she was so devoted that she stayed, wanted to stay with the husband and rejoin the husband wherever he was. That was the point. She wanted to be with the husband eternally, basically. That sort of loyalty. And that's what we mean by chastity. That it's loyalty to the highest degree. That's epitomized in the last verse of the Shikshashtaka, where Lord Chaitanya says, you know, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, but you'll always remain my Lord unconditionally. Of course, I mean, going back to the whole point of wife and husband, it's not that it has to be to that extent. I'm not advocating that the wife has to stay with a husband who's completely nonsense, bogus, and abusive and things like that. And the example to prove that point is the story of Sati, who is the daughter of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had this person, Amoga, as his son-in-law, who was married to Sati. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Jagannath Puri would invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come over to his house to take prasad. So what happened is, in one time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came over to his house, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya recognized the fact that Amoga was a great offender, that he was always looking for fault. Just like I knew someone, actually it was one of my godbrothers, who would, this was many years ago when I was, 1975, I was in South America, and he would, he was very expert at making ice cream. He got this ice cream maker. Anyway, he imported it from America, the type you put ice cubes in it, and you just ice cream. And he would invite me down to his room and eat ice cream, and then after I ate ice cream, he said, you eat too much, you know, you're just like not controlling your senses. So I never wanted to be around him when I was taking prasadam. There's people like that, isn't it? You never want to be around because they're always looking at what you're eating. And therefore you get sick. So Amoga was like that with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he was looking to fall. I mean, there were several people who were envious around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only Amoga, you know, Ramchandra Puri, he was also criticizing Lord Chaitanya for eating too much. So you see, it's not, you know, you shouldn't complain because there's too many envious people around. Even Lord Chaitanya had envious people around, isn't it? And anyway, so anyway, Lord Chaitanya was taking prasadam and he was eating quite a bit. Sometimes he would eat a lot, sometimes he'd eat a little. So as he was eating prasadam, Amoga happened to sneak in and was able to see how much Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating. He said, this sannyasi is eating as much as 10 men eat normally. And Lord Chaitanya thought it was very humorous. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he did not think it was humorous because there was an offense being committed by one of his family members in his own house against the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya. So he began to chase Amoga with a stick to beat him. And Amoga, being younger than Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is practically old enough to be his grandfather, was able to outrun him. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chuckling through the whole thing. He thought it was quite humorous. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he basically said, and he and his wife said that Sati, his daughter, no longer had a husband. In other words, the marriage was finished. It's interesting, isn't it? And Prabhupada also said there's no duty for a wife to stay with a husband who has fallen, irretrievably fallen. It doesn't mean that, you know, your husband one night watches NFL football. I don't know if you know what NFL football is. National Football League football. And you're in Maya, I'm out of here. That's not what it's being mentioned. But someone who is irretrievably fallen. That means fallen. Completely gone. So, therefore, it was considered that she didn't have that duty to stay with him anymore. And ultimately, of course, he was saved by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the marriage was again considered bona fide, and they lived happily ever after. Because Amoga got cholera, Lord Chaitanya cured his cholera, and Amoga became a pure devotee by chanting Hare Krishna, being initiated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so it's not that it's an absolute principle that you have to remain loyal to someone who's a rascal. It's not. And also with the point about spiritual master and disciple, if the spiritual master is not bona fide, something you got to remain loyal to him. Is not a bona fide spiritual master. You know, it's not that we have that same conviction that Lord Chaitanya had about Lord Nityananda we mentioned the other day, that even if he marries a Muslim girl or enters into a liquor store, that, you know, I'll still remain loyal to him. I mean, if your guru marries a Muslim girl, you should have some doubts about him. Or if he goes to the liquor store to preach is one thing. That's okay. I've gone into some bars to preach. It's good preaching. People give big donations. So, because they don't know how much they're giving at a liquor store. And I think even Sadhvi's going into liquor stores to preach. Yes, he goes in and everyone says, "Oh, Nittai the clown. Hoodie bowl." And they throw $100 bills at her. So I'm not, you know, I'm completely convinced that that she's a very chaste lady, even though she's going into a liquor store. So, anyway, nothing will deter my conviction that Sadhvi is a chaste lady. Anyway, so these are some of the points. But so, getting back to the point about the dedication to the spiritual master's mission. That's shown in a metaphorical way by Kunti's pastime, Kunti and Madri's pastimes when Pandu passed away. That Pandu passed away, of course, because he is attempting to embrace Madri and been cursed that he would die in such a fashion. And then there was some discussion who would leave with Pandu. And it was decided that Kunti would stay because she was best at carrying out the mission of Pandu, which is taking care of the Pandavas. And how was she best? Because she was able to consider all of the Pandavas, those who were born from her and those who were not born from her, that is Nakula and Sahadev, to be equal. She didn't treat anyone like as her favorite. Like sometimes you'll find people treating someone as a favorite. Like if you have a stepmother, sometimes she'll treat her actual children better than you. I mean, there's always so many fairy tales about what the wicked stepmother and things like that. I mean, was that Cinderella? Is that the wicked stepmother story? Yeah. So, not always. I mean, sometimes you have good stepmothers. I'm not criticizing stepmothers. But, so it was decided that Kunti could carry out the mission of Pandu. And therefore, she stayed, and she was very dedicated. And there was no intention that Kunti should leave her body. So Prabhupada said in the fourth canto, part four, that the disciples should be chaste in the same way. And by that chastity to the spiritual master, because in Kali Yuga, in one point I wanted to make, is the men and the women are equally sentimental and stupid. You know, so it's not. And if one's a Vaishnava, then there's no difference anyway. Like Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, in the 18th chapter of the Madhya Lila, he said a Vaishnavi is to be considered equal to the Vaishnavas. You know, the Vaishnavi women, he said, are not lesser than the men. That may come as a shock to some of you who are male chauvinists. Just like we're fighting this whole thing now to allow women to be gurus in ISKCON. It's a real controversial thing. It's so controversial, listen to this, this is so interesting, that we have this email system called PAMHO. Anyone's heard of it before? It became so overloaded with spam mail because of this controversy that their internet provider cut off their service. And that now they're getting back online. They say, well, we can't allow any like mail to go off, you know, because it sends mail to non-PAMHO people, you know, people who have non-PAMHO mail addresses. So they said, we're going to really have to control like this mail now. But this is, it almost destroyed our email system because of all the controversy, you know, all the people said, you know, women should be in the kitchen cooking and cleaning. But, so Krishnadas, not Krishnadas, but Vrindavandas Thakur, he states that the Vaishnavi women should not be considered less than the Vaishnava men. So this is a very interesting statement. So in Kali Yuga, getting back to the point I wanted to make, in Kali Yuga, everyone basically has just as much an emotional state, uncontrolled mind. And so the thing that controls us in Kali Yuga, the thing that keeps us in the straight and narrow path, is the principle of chastity for all of us. And it means dedication to the mission of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. I mean, we can get into our own little lives, that's true. I mean, just like I was, you know, oftentimes my mind starts thinking, oh, maybe I should get into my own little life, just sit down, chant Hare Krishna. Like yesterday, I really wanted to chant 64 rounds. Krishna didn't want me to. Can you imagine me saying, Krishna didn't want me to chant 64 rounds? I mean, I only chant about 25 rounds. I was very disappointed. So, you know, but then so many things happened during the day. We had this Gita Jayanti. There was, I mean, I can't tell you what things that, in the mission of Prabhupada that happened. Then we have a devotee here who's getting ready to leave her body. Then I have another devotee who's the sister of one of my disciples in Philadelphia. I had to make so many calls around because she got sick and she's attending Drexel University in Philadelphia. And there was no one there because it's vacation, and she had to be transported to the hospital, and she almost died. So I had to take care of that. So in other words, I can think, well, what about me? You know, and the mind is like that. You know, the mind is actually very unchaste. It's like even in the name of devotional service, and you want to chant Hare Krishna just to escape from serving Krishna. Think about that for a second. Many times we want to chant because we want to escape from service. Of course, chanting is service. I understand that. I'm not denying that devotees should chant extra. I also always try to encourage devotees to chant 64 rounds on Ekadashi when possible. But there's, you know, things that have a higher priority, like preaching, helping devotees, isn't it? The higher priority. So by this dedication to the mission, we have to be mission-oriented. Because that's actually how we made chase the Prabhupada. Just like in every business, they have a strategic mission statement like that. Like we mentioned many times before, Starbucks coffee says to give people a unique coffee experience, whatever the hell that means. So, I don't know what it means. But anyway, they meditate on the mission. So when you think of your mission, you know, your mission is, what is our mission? To serve Prabhupada in the Krishna Ashram, which means to serve the other devotees, you know, like if a devotee gets sick or something, serving the other devotees. I mean, I've had so many nice comments about that, too. Even Lochan Prabhu told me yesterday, he said, this is even, what the devotees here are doing is even better than the Christians, which is a pretty good compliment. And then another devotee in Bosnia, whose sister I mentioned before is in the hospital. She has to stay several days. She almost died. I said, wow, I'm just overwhelmed with how the devotees responded. Because he called me, and then we got in touch with Vrindasarup Prabhu, and then I got in touch with Shukada, you know, all the people I know in Philadelphia. And then there's this doctor, devotee, I forget his name, is a Prabhupada disciple in Philadelphia, a very prominent devotee. And he actually looked into the whole thing and looking after her and everything like that. So he was overwhelmed with the response. And so, by that, you know, it increases people's faith in the Krishna consciousness movement, and it's also part of Vaishnava activity to help others, and it's part of serving Prabhupada's mission. So therefore, you know, I didn't chant 64 rounds, which I would have liked to have done yesterday, but, you know, Hare Krishna. So that's the point. By remaining chaste to the mission of Prabhupada, our minds come under control, and we don't remain self-centered, even self-centered in the name of Krishna consciousness. You understand? Because many times we're self-centered in the name of Krishna consciousness. You know, what I would like to do. You know, I would like to do a lot of things. But because I have Prabhupada's mission, it helps me control my mind and remain chaste and also eventually go back to home, back to God, in spite of having the Kali Yuga minds. Okay? On that note, I hope that wasn't too controversial. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.